What does the executive order by President Trump entail?
The executive order is active now, and in effect what it's doing is it's blocking several specific groups of immigrants and refugees. Now, first, of course, and definitely what's got the most play in the media, is that it blocks seven specific countries from any immigrants entering the United States. That includes Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Now, it blocks those immigrants from entering the U.S. for at least 30 days. And certainly what we've been seeing over the past couple days has been that it's also been affecting green card holders, people who have legal residency within the U.S., as well as dual citizens. And that's slowly been getting cleaned up. But in addition to that group, what it also does is it suspends all refugee admissions for a minimum of 120 days. And even after that period, the order states that the U.S. will only admit nationals once the U.S. government has procedures in place that ensure the security and welfare of the U.S. And that's actually going to have a real big effect as well. The U.S. is the single biggest resettlement country on the planet. Over the last couple of years, they've accepted about 70,000 refugees a year, and they were planning in 2017 to accept 110,000 based on an order issued by President Obama. So just cutting that for 120 days is a huge effect. And then in the order as well, President Trump has argued that the U.S. will only admit a maximum of 50,000 refugees in 2017. So those are the core groups that are being affected by it.
President Trump announced that extreme vetting will be introduced for these refugees when they do eventually start to come to America. Doesn't America have one of the most intense vetting processes already?
Yes, and that's where this is a bit of a misnomer, the idea of extreme vetting. It is there. Under the Obama administration, these refugees already had to go through a huge number of checks. The process they went through would take an average of 18 to 24 months, so we're talking about 2 years. It included them providing huge amounts of information. It also included them having in-person interviews with Department of Homeland Security agents, as well as other U.S. officials, including from the State Department. So what you were seeing was that these people were the most vetted individuals on Earth already. And the idea that any sort of more extreme system would actually uncover more information is wrong. The other big thing, of course, that the order doesn't point to is that refugees are incredibly unlikely to engage in terrorist acts. Within the United States, for example, CNN had a piece yesterday noting that no refugee except in the U.S. since 1980 has engaged in terrorist acts in the United States. There's been about 10 refugees since 9/11 who have had their applications canceled, primarily because it was found that they may have engaged in terrorist acts in their home country, but not in the United States. So this is a group that, by and large, has been incredibly safe, and this is a group where these vetting mechanisms have been working properly.
Is this breaking the United States' obligations to refugees that they signed up for in the 1967 protocol?
Yes. This is always one of the interesting bits, because, of course, we talk about the UN Refugee Convention in Australia, but there was actually a protocol passed to it in 1967, and that's all the U.S. has signed on to. But the 1967 protocol duplicates the Refugee Convention in all substantive ways. It changes the refugee definition slightly, removing an old sort of dateline clause that existed, as well as removing a Europe or Europe and elsewhere clause that states could have adopted. So the U.S. is a full signatory, in effect, to the convention. Now, it's unclear how this is going to affect its actual legal obligations. In terms of resettlement, the convention is relatively silent on those issues. It's up to a state, if they want to accept in refugees through a resettlement program, they can, but they're not obligated to. Who they are obligated to deal with is any refugee who reaches their territory and makes a claim there. And so far, at least, we haven't seen too many stories about refugees actually being pushed back at the land borders of the U.S. And so from that standpoint, they're not in strict violation of the Refugee Convention at this point. But if they did start to return refugees, particularly if they started to return refugees to countries where they might be persecuted, such as to Syria, then they would be in clear violation of the convention.
For the people that aren't necessarily refugees but have come from one of those seven countries, there has been an injunction by a federal court judge offered some protections to them. And what are these and how do they help them?
Yes. We've seen a patchwork of different injunctions issued over the last sort of 36 hours. And what these injunctions are doing is a couple different things. Firstly, they're seeking to release usually green card holders or dual citizens who have been detained within the U.S., who basically were arriving on planes after the executive order was issued and then have been in immigration detention. In some cases, they've been in there for a period of 24 hours or more, in some cases, less time. The problem with these injunctions is that they're based on the U.S. Constitution, and they apply only on U.S. territory. And so we've seen relatively few cases where it's actually been outside the U.S. territory. There's been one where it's actually been an order requiring the Department of Homeland Security to return someone they had already deported based on the order. But in most cases, these injunctions are just applying within the U.S. territory. So in effect, if you're being blocked outside the United States, it's unclear what path you have. There's a particularly sad story involving a girl, a 12-year-old girl from Yemen, whose parents are in the U.S. legal citizens, whose two younger siblings are in the U.S. legal citizens. She hadn't received citizenship, but she has been processed. She had received a green card, and she was denied boarding a flight. So she has, as soon as she actually physically reaches the U.S., not only does she have a green card, but under existing law, she'd become a U.S. citizen. And yet, she simply can't get into the U.S. in order to claim that status.